in Jerusalem had come out to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother, to mourn with them. Verse 20, when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, but Mary remained seated in the house. And we don't know why. Maybe Mary was just so broken up, she couldn't do it. Maybe she wanted to wait. She was just not in a place to do that. But Martha gets up and goes to meet Jesus. In verse 21, Martha says to Jesus, after meeting him, "Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. You're like 4+ days late. If you had been here, my brother would not have died." I mean, this is a funeral. This is like a week-long funeral. That's the setting. Everyone's mourning. People have come out from literally miles away to mourn the death of Lazarus. Martha says to Jesus, "If you had been here earlier, my brother would not have died." But then in verse 22, she says, "But even now, I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you." And actually, I don't think she's talking about resurrection. I think she's just saying, "It hurts me, and I'm so disappointed that you didn't come. But I believe in you anyway. I still believe who you are. I still trust you. I still believe that you are the Son of God. I believe that God listens to whatever you say. This does not stop me from following you." It's a beautiful act of devotion. Actually, next week, we're going to hear another story from a friend who has a story kind of like this, who has prayed for some alleviation and some suffering that he's been going through that hasn't happened, but how he's continued to trust the Lord and follow him. It's a beautiful story, and this is Martha too. "If you'd been here, my brother would not have died, but even now, I believe you. I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give to you." In verse 23, Jesus says to her, "Your brother will rise again." And Martha says, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." That is, I believe in a general resurrection. At the end of time, everyone's going to get resurrected. I believe that, and he's going to be part of that. I know that. But then Jesus says, verse 25, Jesus says to her, "I am the resurrection. I am the resurrection. I am the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die." Do you believe this? Basically, he's saying, yeah, you believe in a general resurrection. That's good. But what I'm telling you, the innovation that John is telling us, that Jesus is introducing here, is that that resurrection happens through him. He is the source of that resurrection. In verse 27, Martha says to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world." Verse 28, when she had said this, she went and called her sister Mary. She went back, she told Mary in private, "The teacher, the rabbi, Jesus, is here, and he's calling for you." And when she heard it, she rose quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come into the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary rise quickly and go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. So it's a funeral. Mary gets up. They don't know where she's going. They just assume that she's going to go back to the tomb to weep for her brother. And this community around her gets up and goes with her to weep with her. It's beautiful kind of solidarity. Verse 32, now when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet. Just picture this. It's a funeral. She's weeping. The people around her are weeping. And she comes to Jesus, the one she knows can heal her brother or could have healed her brother, and she falls at his feet. And he says, and she said to him, "Lord," same thing that Martha, her sister, said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And it ends there. I don't know if she just kept weeping at that point. That's all she could say. Then in verse 33, John says, when Jesus saw her weeping, and when he saw the Jews who had come with her, also weeping, also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. And he said, "Where have you laid him?" And they said to him, "Lord, come and see." And then verse 35 simply says, Jesus wept. Now remember, Jesus told his disciples, "We're going to go to Lazarus, and he's died, but I'm glad I was not there for your sake." He says, "I'm going to raise him. I'm going to resurrect him from the dead." So if Jesus knows he's going to resurrect Lazarus from the dead, why is he weeping? I think he's weeping because he feels so much solidarity with Mary and Martha and this community. He enters their pain. He weeps with them. This is not Jesus just weeping about a death. It's not like Jesus just weeping about Lazarus. He knows he's going to be resurrected. But he weeps because he sees Martha weeping and Mary weeping and this community around them weeping. That's why Jesus weeps. I mean, the solidarity that we see here is tremendous. And maybe many of you have experienced this kind of thing when you've gone through a hard time, just people coming around you and actually like carrying you through a very difficult time, actually carrying you. I know I've experienced this too. I've actually experienced this very recently. But about like 20 years ago, though, I was another time a community has carried me with solidarity. I just graduated college, and my mom had a severe spinal injury. And initially she was paralyzed, and she couldn't, she was in the hospital for a while, and then after surgery and everything, she was in the rehab part of the hospital for months as well. But I remember during that time, as people came out of the woodwork, friends, family, my mom's church. They came out. They came to the hospital like constantly. I was in the hospital myself constantly, and people were coming in. They're bringing food. Like I'm Korean American. My mom's Korean American, and like she has this Korean community. They're coming, you know, Koreans, man, their love language is food. Like, oh my gosh, you know, like all this food coming in. It's like I can't possibly eat this much soup in one day. You know, it's like you know, it's like I like pears, but I can't eat 20 of them. You know, anyway. All this food coming in, all these people just coming, sometimes praying, sometimes just visiting, crying with us. I remember this actually, this family, and they had two little girls. The oldest one was maybe 11 at the time. And they came into the hospital room, and they saw me, and I knew them. And the 11-year-old girl, she just came. And she looked so upset in her face. I think she even might have been crying. And she just reached around me and gave this ginormous hug. Just a little, it was like around my waist. I'm like, I don't know what to, you know. But, I still remember, that's like one of my clearest memories from that time, is, you know, her doing that. But a community can really carry somebody like that. And that's what we see happening in John 11. All right, let's get back to this. Verse 35, Jesus wept. In verse 36, so the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying?" So it's the same thing that Martha was saying, but Martha's basically the opposite. Martha and Mary said, "He could have come earlier." But Martha says, "You know, but I still believe in him. I still follow him." And these people are basically foils for Martha. Verse 38, then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay against it. So they buried people not like 6 feet deep in the ground, but it was a cave. And over the opening of the cave, there's a big stone laying against it. Verse 39, Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, so she doesn't know what's going on. She's, you know, we're just weeping. It's a funeral. We're just at the tomb weeping. And all of a sudden, Jesus says, "Take away the stone." And Mary says, "What is going on?" And Mary says to him, "Lord, by this time, there will be an odor. It's been 4 days. Like, what are we doing here?" And Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone, and Jesus lifted up his eyes. And he said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this on account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you have sent me." Verse 43, when he said these things, he cried out with a loud voice. I'm already pretty loud, so I won't go super loud, but "Lazarus, come out." Verse 44, the man who had died came out, his hands and feet bound with linen strips. This is kind of customary burial kind of wrap for a dead person, and his face wrapped with a cloth. And Jesus said to them, "Unbind him," like take off the wraps and let him go. It was end there. Man, what a story. I just want to talk about two takeaways. All right, so earlier I said, as we read the story, keep these two questions in mind. First, who is Jesus? And second, what does it look like to follow him? First question, who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? He's a resurrection. That's what he says. He's a resurrection. Resurrection happens through him. This imminent resurrection that happened to Lazarus, but the thing is, Lazarus, after he was resurrected, he didn't live forever. He died again. He was resurrected, but he was back in his old body. But there's a resurrection that's coming where our bodies will be completely changed, where our bodies are going to be like Jesus' body. Jesus is a resurrection. Who is Jesus? He is a resurrection. Who is Jesus? He says, "I am the resurrection." See, Jesus pairs life, like eternal life, with resurrection. And I think I talk about this often, mostly because a lot of Christians tend to think that there's no such thing as resurrection. You know, a lot of Christians seem to think we die and then our souls go to heaven to live forever. You know, this is not Christian teaching. All right, it might be like in a book that has a Christian label on it, or it might be in the Christian section of Barnes and Nobles, but that's not a Christian teaching. You know, like, I don't have an axe to grind. I'm just trying to teach the Bible, man, you know. Christian teaching, like what Jesus talked about, what Paul talked about, what the writer of Hebrews talked about, what the whole Bible talks about, is that we die, and yes, in some real way, continue to live in God's presence, but then Jesus will return, and we'll all rise and have new bodies and live in this earth, like a transformed earth, but in this world. You know, like Hebrews 11 is actually like a very famous chapter about faith. You know, it's like, oh, think about all these people who had faith. They had faith in da-da-da-da, and they did this and did that. You know, that faith is not in just like the general existence of God. Like, I believe so strongly that there is a God who exists. I mean, that's part of it. But in Hebrews 11, what they're talking about is faith and resurrection. That's what that chapter is all about. And you see that throughout the Bible. "I am the resurrection" means that there is no resurrection, there's no new creation, no new order of things without Jesus. You know, a lot of idealistic people, maybe including us, dream of a new earth, a new government, a new order. And we dream of it in a way that's like without Jesus. Like Jesus is sort of unnecessary or superfluous. He doesn't do anything in that. You know, we get there through better legislation. We get there through better laws and courts. We get there through education. We'll get there through political revolution, military revolution. And to those kind of sentiments, Jesus says, "I am the resurrection." That's who Jesus is. I'm the resurrection. I'm the one who brings that. And the second thing I want to say is to that question, who is Jesus? Yeah, he's a resurrection. I want to say that number two, Jesus is fully human and fully God. And this is a crazy thing. And the early church had to figure this out. Like they're like, well, Jesus is totally God, but then he's totally man. So what is it? Maybe he sort of like pretends to be man, like da-da-da. And they came up with this solution. And it's sort of a mystery. It's like beyond our comprehension. But their solution was he's fully God and fully human. And that fully human part is really hard to wrap our minds around. That fully human part is like kind of too wonderful for me, as to use like the psalmist phrase. Like we can't comprehend how radically he identifies with us. How much solidarity, how much kinship. That's how he feels for us, like kinship. I could even say like filial piety. You know, I had this friend he's like, when I think of filial piety, I think of this guy. He's like Mr. Filial Piety. And he has family in Hong Kong. And like, this is how deep his piety goes. Like, he's not a Christian, or he's become a Christian, but at the time he wasn't a Christian. He had an aunt who was like the matriarch of the family, and the aunt passed away, and she lived in Hong Kong. And this aunt, in her kind of last will and kind of desires, she said, I want like this next generation, like my kids and my nieces and nephews, to like read the Bible and pray every day, because she was a Christian. And so our friend, I mean, he's not a Christian, he's like, I gotta do it, because that's what my aunt wanted. That was her dying wish. That's what I'm going to do. And so he picked up this, like, crazy, it's basically, like, the Chinese version of the King James Bible. Like, he's like, I don't know what any of this means. I'm just kind of looking at the, like, looking at the characters, you know, whatever. And then that's actually how we started, like, doing Bible study. We had already been friends, but he's like, oh, no, I really need to understand this Bible and stuff like that. I mean, some of you, too, are blessed to be really close to your families. And like you would do anything for your families. You have that kind of allegiance. Sometimes unhealthy, but it's in some ways very good to have that kind of allegiance. That's how Jesus feels toward us. That's the kind of kinship he feels toward us. I mean, when you think, okay, Jesus identifies with us, I have a sort of a sense, just multiply that by a million. His solidarity with us is so, like, just ridiculous. It's incredible. It's radical. That's why, like, him being fully human, it's, like, really hard to sort of understand. But, you know, let me just talk about Isaiah 53. Isaiah 53 is this passage about, like, a suffering servant. And the New Testament, the early church, all said this 53, Isaiah 53 is about Jesus. And it says that this servant, this Jesus, was despised and rejected. He was a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. He was despised. And it says, surely he has carried our sorrows. Surely he has borne our griefs. That's who Jesus is. You know, sometimes we talk about Isaiah 53 in terms of like his sort of substitutionary death for us. That's true. But the Bible also talks very clearly about Isaiah 53 being about his radical identification with us. Like, sometimes you might think, how does Jesus, like, this is part of his fully humanness, like, how does Jesus carry my sin? Because Jesus didn't murder anyone. Jesus didn't commit adultery. You know, Jesus never cheated. He never lied. Jesus never, I mean, and we could, whatever sins you can think of. Jesus never did those things. So how can he identify with me? Like, how can he take those sins on himself? And it's a mystery. But somehow, he knows what it's like to have sinned all those sins. He has borne, somehow, mysteriously, he has borne all the consequences of those sins that he never himself committed. But in the same way, he knows all our sorrows. He knows all our pain. He weeps with us constantly. And like, well, Jesus wasn't a woman. Jesus wasn't a minority in his community. Jesus didn't have AIDS. I mean, there's a lot of things we can think of. Well, Jesus, how can you identify with me? But that's a radicalness of Jesus' human nature, that he actually does so radically identify with us. And we see this in John 11. He knew he was going to resurrect Lazarus. Why was he weeping? He was weeping because he cares so much about us, and he doesn't just heal us, he enters our pain. That's the beauty of the Lord. He weeps with us. He weeps with us. That's how closely he identifies with us. He's part of that community coming out to weep with us, just sitting with you and weeping with you. Yeah, he can heal too, but he weeps with you. He identifies with you. He knows everything you're going through. Mysteriously, somehow, he knows everything you feel. Every fear you have, every insecurity you have. He feels that so deeply, and he feels that with you. That's who Jesus is. Who is Jesus? He's a resurrection. Number two, who is Jesus? He's fully human. He weeps with us. All right, second question was, what does it look like to be his disciple? And I think we have a great picture here in a guy named Thomas. Later in the book of God, in the book, this Gospel of John, Thomas is, he doubts. So Jesus himself is resurrected, and then the disciples see the resurrected Jesus. They tell Thomas, and Thomas is like, it can't happen. It can't be. I'm not going to believe it unless I put my fingers there where the nails were. And then he sees Jesus, and then Thomas is just ecstatic. And for that, and I think it's, I don't know if it's like unbelief. I think it's just like he was so heartbroken. He loves Jesus. He loved Jesus. And he was so crushed when Jesus died. And then for the next 2,000 years, everyone called him Doubting Thomas. That's what you get. Anyway, that's what you get for loving Jesus. Anyway, but this Jesus that was so loved by Thomas in chapter 11, you know, this Thomas is so, such a beautiful disciple. When other disciples are like, let's not go back to Judea. Jesus, you're going to get stoned, and so are we. Thomas says, let's go with him so that we can die with him. You know, some people ask, like, what does it mean to be a Christian? What's a Christian? I think there's a bunch of ways you can define that. You know, a Christian is someone who loves God. A Christian is someone who believes in Christ. I think another way you can say it is a Christian is someone who will do anything for Jesus. And that's the kind of disciples I think Thomas is showing us how to be. The thing is, Thomas is not just doing this out of like his good heart. I think Thomas is just mirroring Jesus' heart toward us. That's actually literally like what we could place in the mouth of Jesus. Let's go with these people so that we can die with them. He didn't have to die for us, but he did. Out of that solidarity, that's what he's coming to do. That's what he's come to do, and that's what he will do. He will join us to himself. That's the Jesus that we follow. Please pray with me.